Hello, and welcome to Sesquicentennial Stories, a deep dive into the history of Alaska before, during, and after the Alaska Purchase in 1867. Our goal is to tell the story of the 49th state from as many viewpoints as possible, presenting you with some twists on stories you know, and hopefully learning something new along the way. This series is sponsored by the Sitka Historical Society and the Sitka History Museum. I'm Emmett Williams, and today I'm speaking with author Dennis Noble, who's written a book called Captain Hell Roaring Mike Healy, From American Slave to Arctic Hero. I asked Dennis about Healy's early life and the secret he would keep till he died. There's so many incredible things about this story, but and it starts at the very beginning when he is a child of a woman who was a slave and an Irish immigrant, and the challenges of that in the South. How did, and then they had all these amazing kids. Can you talk to me a little bit about their challenges?
The family.
Yeah, the family. Yep.
Yeah. Healy's father was an Irishman who emigrated to this country and ended up in Georgia. Became a very successful plantation owner. He selected Eliza Clark as his wife. He stayed with her for his entire life. Him and Eliza had 8 children, and all were of varying skin colors. They could pass. Now, the area of what I can see in his home near Macon, Georgia, the community knew he had an African American wife, but they, as long as they didn't flaunt it, they let it go. So when the kids started to grow up, he sent all the males to basically Holy Cross College for an education. Females went to a place in Montreal, Canada. They passed for white. Now, that is a contention with many people, but you have to remember that at times, if anybody would have found out, for example, if anybody would have found out Captain Healy was an African American, he'd have never held command. There's no question about that. His brothers, 3 of them entered the Catholic Church, with 2 of them attaining high positions. One became the Bishop of Portland, Maine. Another one became the president of Georgetown University in the Washington, D.C. area. 2 of the females entered the Catholic Church. Both were teachers. One was a very well-known teacher in the United States, in northeastern United States. Just an amazing family. They always had to pass as white. They have been taken to task for that. But what, again, I will repeat, what else could they do given the time?
Exactly. Was there ever a time when it came up during Mike Healy's career?
It was, as far as I know of it, and the records, any of the records I've looked at, the National Archives and other places, nobody had ever guessed it in the Revenue Cutter Service. There is some indication that the oldest brother, who was the bishop, the people in Portland, Maine, sort of understood that he was African American, but didn't make a big thing about it. One of the things about Mike Healy, near the as his career progressed, he wanted to stay to the West Coast. I think my own personal opinion is, he was afraid if he went to the East Coast for duty, somebody would put 2 and 2 together about his brother. And he preferred to stay on the West Coast because of the communications in those days. I think that's probably the main reason he always wanted to stay on the West Coast.
That makes sense. So he starts his career out actually in Massachusetts, gets a job on a boat in Boston, near Boston. And
yeah,
immediately has ability for being on the sea.
Yeah, I should have probably said that earlier, too. While most of the brothers, Healy's brother, did very well, he was doing okay in Holy Cross, but he didn't seem to care for the studies. So he started to run away. And his brothers eventually sent him to a Catholic training place in Donai, France, and then brought him back again. And he's continued to run away, and he eventually ran away to sea. I think one of the reasons he did that, and this is just my conjecture, is he could go down to the Holy Cross, is not that far even in that time, to the docks of Boston. I think he went down there and saw African Americans being treated equal on ships. Now, when I say they're treated equal, they were treated equal for the deck force gang. Officers were always white. But he saw these African Americans doing that. And so he ran away to sea, came back, and his brothers basically said, "Okay, if you're going to do that, we'll figure a good ship for you to go to where you can start to learn to be a sailor." He started in sailing merchant marine on the deck force or the deck as a sailor, and worked himself up to second mate, which is a goodly way to come in the sailing marine. And from there, he met his wife in Boston, and I think what he wanted to do was settle down, and he looked around and said, "What kind of service at this time could I do but be at sea, but not be at sea as long?" He chose the Revenue Cutter Service, which was a predecessor of the U.S. Coast Guard, and he joined there as a third lieutenant.
You're listening to Sesquicentennial Stories, brought to you by the Sitka Historical Society and the Sitka History Museum. I'm talking to author Dennis Noble about Captain Mike Healy. We'll pick up the story with Healy leaving the East Coast for the West and then on his way up to Alaska. So then he goes to the Northwest, and does he immediately go to Alaska, or is there a stop in between?
Yes. The Revenue Cutter Service had a strange way of doing things, but also you have to remember in these days, if a person got transferred across country, they had to go around the Horn, because there was no railroad at that time across country.
Right.
Okay. The Revenue Cutter Service had him stationed at a number of places on a number of cutters, and they did sea duty in those days. They had to do sea duty. They transferred him to a number of places around the East Coast. Then he went to the West Coast, to San Francisco area, in about 1869. And from there, the cutter there was transferred up to Sitka, Alaska, in 1869. And that's the first time he had any experience in the North. And he also went over into the Bering Sea area in 1869. Then he came back again to the East Coast. Then he came back to the West Coast again. Mm-hmm. Then back to the East Coast again. And then finally, he ends up in the West Coast in San Francisco, and San Francisco was the place where all the cutters would go every spring and summer to the Bering Sea and up into the above the Arctic Circle. So from about late 1870s, early 1880s, he was permanently on the West Coast.
Healy comes to the southeast of Alaska, and he is quickly put in charge of the Bear. And I know we're skipping over a bunch of things, but
that's all right. How about me saying it this way?
Yeah.
Captain Healy came to the West Coast. He basically operated, except for a small period of time. He operated out of Sitka on a ship, on a cutter. But while he was in San Francisco, is where he did most of his trips to Alaska. And he had at least two cutters. And then he finally got the Bear. And he got the Bear around 18... Oh, let me see. I can see it in a minute here, I think. He got it around 1886, and that's when it really became the two people. It became the pair that most people know about is Healy and the Bear, but it wasn't until 1886 that that happened. And the interesting thing about Healy and the Bear, I think, is they became almost as one. You read some accounts, and it's almost, are they talking about the bear or are they talking about Healy? And it's amazing. I think it's an amazing thing. And it's also an amazing thing to show how much he and the bear were thought about.
Yeah, it seems like he had this really sort of symbiotic relationship with the cutter, the bear. Was there a reason for that? Was that just his incredible proficiency as a sailor?
Yes, exactly. Healy was a very complicated man. Just with the race right there, you could see he's going to be complicated. But he was a very complicated man. But I don't think anybody could ever say that he was not a master captain or a master sailor. His record shows that he never lost a ship in that area. And as I said, the area was just not known. And any time you could operate for as long as he did in that area without losing his ship, I think it's an amazing compliment or amazing thing to say that he could do that. And because he was so popular, his cutter became popular. And his cutter, which was the Bear, and the Bear it is a great story in itself. It lasted for a long time. In fact, like I said, it was the 1880s when he got the cutter. The cutter actually lasted into and through World War II. It operated in World War II.
Wow.
Now, what they did, of course, is they had better engines. They cut the mast down and did a few other things. But can you imagine a ship being used that long? Now, it wasn't used the entire time. The Coast Guard, by then it was the Coast Guard. The Coast Guard said, it's too old. We've got to decommission it. And the city of Oakland, California, took it as a museum ship because it was known then as the Bear of Oakland, because the Bear operated out of the Bay Area, and it was the museum ship for a while. And then when Admiral Byrd made his first trip to the Antarctic, he wanted the Bear, so they brought it out of museum status and it sailed in the Antarctic.
You've been listening to Sesquicentennial Stories with special guest author Dennis Noble. On part two of our conversation about Captain Mike Healy, we'll hear about his adventures in Alaska, his setbacks, and his importance to our history. This series is sponsored by the Sitka History Museum and the Sitka Historical Society with support from the Rasmussen Foundation, the Sitka Legacy Fund, and KCW Sitka. This series is produced by Mission Man Media. Jeff Budd is the executive producer. I'm Emmett Williams, and thanks for listening.